Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 44, Mike. 44 weeks of this stuff, 44 episodes that doesn't stop, right?
I think it's what, 1 year anniversary is around,
and we're coming
September
up.
14th. Around
We're coming up on 1 year here on the Last Round Podcast. But thanks again for joining us. I'm Danny Z along with my co-host, the franchise, Michael Shepherd. And before we go into our normal routine of reviews and previews of this week's fights and last week's fights, we have a very special guest on the line who was in the most significant fight of this past weekend. Heavyweight just defeated Chris the Nightmare Areola in Brooklyn, New York on Fox, right?
Yep.
Adam Babyface Kownacki is on the line. 20-0, 15 KOs. Thanks for joining us, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
But so as I mentioned, it is actually a record performance between both of you. Over 2,000 punches thrown against Chris the Nightmare Areola. And when you were in that ring, did you know you were throwing that many punches? I mean, could you feel that? Did you know maybe it was a record?
Not really. No, it was a shock when they announced it after the fight, but I knew it was a tough fight. Chris Ariola was very game, and he was getting around too, so I knew I'd throw more just to beat him. I think he actually threw more punches, but I landed more, which is what counts.
Right, absolutely. And then there was also one thing before the fight. A lot of people, a lot of fans, and a lot of media pundits and media personalities were surprised that you actually weighed more than Areola on fight night. I think you outweighed him by like about 20 pounds. But we're assuming that was by design, right? Was that the plan?
Yeah, I knew he was going to come forward. I knew he was going to do a lot of inside fighting. So I wanted to have like some extra weight so I could fight better on the inside. But watching the fight now, actually, I did better when I was jabbing and keeping my distance. I think I went the wrong way.
Adam, you have a huge Polish fan base in New York. Is that something that, you know, drives you on, helps you when you get into those later rounds?
Yeah, for sure. Especially like the crowd cheers me on, and it definitely gives you some extra motivation to continue fighting and not to give up.
Is there anywhere else you'd want to fight? Because obviously, like Mike just mentioned, New York has a large Polish community. And obviously, you know, you'd want to fight in your native Poland if you haven't already, which I'm assuming you have. But is there anywhere else that you'd want to fight where there's a large Polish presence?
Actually, I'm not from Poland. I moved to a state when I was 7. So Poland is definitely on the bucket list. I was also fighting on a national stadium. That's one of my bucket list items. And I love to fight in Vegas. I think all the major fights were always placed in Vegas, so that's also one of my dreams.
When you agreed to come on, Adam, I obviously was doing some research, and I read that you did karate until 1999. Then Polish star Andrew Golota fought Michael Grant, and that you saw the fight and fell in love with boxing. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, correct. I remember watching Golota fight. You know. My dad used to bring his friends over. They used to like gather around and cheer him on, like the people do with me right now. So it was something that definitely motivated me to pick up boxing.
So did you completely stop karate after you started boxing? Did you just choose boxing and you focused on that?
Yeah. So I got a young bug karate, and then I stopped. I think around 10, 11 years old, and I picked up boxing again at age 16. So that was like a little 4-year stop break between one and the other.
And you were successful. You won the Golden Gloves, right? At age 17?
Yeah. It's crazy, too. So I just turned 17. And I was a junior in high school. And I put a phys ed teacher from a different high school. That's pretty cool, you know? I got to beat up on a teacher. I managed to, yeah, I got to drop him twice. But I won the decision. So that was a pretty cool experience.
That's a good story.
That's a good story. That's awesome. Adam, you know, going back to your fight this past Saturday on Fox against Areola, you know, it was obviously an entertaining heavyweight fight, and you guys got into the record books. Was there anything during the fight that kind of, I mean, you seemed to be in control throughout the fight, obviously because you got the decision, but was there anything that maybe Chris had landed on you or anything that he kind of hit you with that maybe thought like, oh, okay, you know, I gotta adjust here? Or was there anything that kind of bothered you during that fight?
He kept coming forward, and I think he's a very good fighter, a veteran. He had a lot of experience, and I feel every time I landed a good combination, he would tie up. And that was a very smart move on his part, and I couldn't capitalize on. I couldn't capitalize on landing some good shots and following up.
Were you able to talk to him after the fight, like without any cameras there or anything like that? Did you guys ever have like a private conversation after the fight?
No, I think he broke his hand, so he had to go to the hospital after the fight. So we didn't speak. And then I didn't see him in the hotel after too, so I haven't spoken with him yet. But I wish I do, man. I want to speak with him. He's a cool guy. We're very respectful to each other, and I wish him the best.
Have you started discussions yet for what's going to be next, or who would you like next?
My son is being born in August 29th. That's the due date. Oh. So I'm excited for that right now. What will happen? That's right. That's the most important thing on my list right now. I can't wait for that day. And that's right. That's all I'm focused on right now. Hopefully, I'll get a call from my manager soon to see what they want boxing fans next. He told me to relax a little bit for a couple of weeks. Like we said before, it was a very grueling fight. A lot of punches were thrown. A lot of people landed. So I want to recover a little bit. But yeah, right now I'm just focused on my wife giving birth to my son.
Well, congratulations on the impending birth at the end of the month, Adam. We, you know, that's always a special moment. Did you spar with anybody? Did you have any significant sparring partners for this fight to try to maybe emulate Areola?
Yeah, Mike Coffey was the head guy. He's a little bit taller. He's at 6'5", at 270, so he's like 9-0. Great fighter, great prospect. Joey DeVaco was with me for like three, four weeks. Also work. And then Darrell Big Baby Miller came in one time. So I had a great sparring for this fight. And, you know, we saw on Saturday night that I was, you know, more than prepared to go the full 12 rounds.
You were one of the names that was in the mix to replace Darrell Miller for the Anthony Joshua fight. Looking back now with what Andy Ruiz did, do you kind of regret not stepping in?
I regret not being in shape. That's my biggest regret.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. It came and went. All I could do was continue fighting, continue winning. Actually, Ruiz called me out before that fight. So I tweeted him, take care of business in the rematch, and you could go head-to-head after his fight with Joshua. He wins.
You two have quite a similar style, you know, very fluid.
Do you agree with that? That you and Ruiz maybe have similar styles?
Yeah, for sure. I think most definitely. I think it will be like a repeat of me and Areola. You know, like two guys that stay in the pocket and go head to head. You know, it'll be another great fight.
Yeah, that would be an exciting fight.
So what you're saying is that if you would have been in shape for during that time when they were looking for a replacement opponent for Jarrell Big Baby Miller, then it would have been a really good chance that it would have been you in the ring with Anthony Joshua that night in New York?
Maybe, yeah, for sure. I mean, it would definitely got most in the negotiation part, but I wasn't in shape, so there was nothing I could have done. I wasn't going to risk my career just for payday. That's not me. I'm here for a legacy, not to make a couple of bucks. So it was a good learning experience, though, you know, that taught me to stay in shape all year around.
Right, absolutely. And then you mentioned that you were sparring with, like, you know, some pretty tall gentlemen, you know, 6'5". You used to be a sparring partner for Vladimir Klitschko, right? Who's like about 6'6", 6'7", right?
Yeah, that's correct. I went there twice, actually. So it was a great learning experience. Picked up on a lot of stuff, and I'm happy I could have experienced that. You know,
what was it like? You know, I'm sure you got to talk to him a little bit while you were in camp with him or training with him. You know, coming from somebody like him who was, you know, arguably the most dominant heavyweight for, you know, a decade, you know, what did you take away from training with him and speaking with him about the sport?
The level of professionalism he shows, you know, everything is well organized, from sparring partner, work ethic. It was pretty amazing to see what it takes to be on a top level.
Where are you training at now, Adam? Are you still at Gleason's gym? Or?
Right now, I'm in the Baltimore Kickboxing Academy.
Is that in Brooklyn or around your area?
That's in Long Island.
Long Island. Okay. Okay. So how long ago? Because you started training at Gleason's gym when you were a teenager, right?
So.
Adam, can you hear us? I think we lost him.
I think we lost signal.
I think we lost signal. Is he still there?
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Yes, yes.
Okay, there you are. Go ahead. We can hear you.
Yeah. Yeah, so I started going to pieces when I was 16 years old. I won my first Golden Gloves over there. And I stayed there for four or five years. And I switched over to a different gym in New Jersey. It was called Global Boxing. I had a couple of fights over there. And I broke my hand, so I lasted for a couple of years. And then I started training again. I'm and my coach, Keith Trimble, and I started training here in Baltimore Kickboxing Academy.
I believe you have a good relationship with now retired Thomas Adamek.
Yeah, for sure. I was in a couple of his camps as a sparring partner. So definitely picked up some stuff from him too.
Was he someone you looked up to as a fellow Polish fighter?
Yeah, for sure. I remember his fight in the Desert Center. It was definitely something as a young kid I loved going to, you know, watching him fight. Especially when he was a cruiserweight and he accomplished so much in that division.
Adam, besides yourself, of course, because obviously everybody loves, you know, everybody wants to be confident in themselves, especially as a fighter. Who do you think is the best heavyweight at the moment? Okay, let's just say, arguably, you know, you're number one, you know, because we obviously want to be confident in ourselves. Who would be number two behind you? Who would you say, okay, that's the next best heavyweight in the division right now?
I think Deontay Wilder. I think his power is phenomenal. He got that knockout power. And then Tyson Fury, I think he's very good too, you know? I think they're tied between number two spot. Number three has to go with Ruiz, and then Joshua.
Not a bad list. And then are you planning on? I know you have you're expecting your child at the end of the month. so that's going to be awesome. But are you planning to when the Wilder and Ortiz eventually, you know, face off potentially in a rematch. Are you planning on being there ringside for that fight, since, of course, you are a contender in the heavyweight division?
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm going to travel out there to the West Coast and watch the fight live, you know?
What do you, so, you know, as I mentioned, you're still undefeated, 20-0, 15 KOs. And, you know, like we mentioned, you trained with Vladimir Klitschko, your golden gloves at age 17. So, you know, you have quite a plethora of accolades behind you. And who were some of the heavyweights? You know, of course, you mentioned you looked up to Adamek and Klitschko. Was there anybody else that you looked up to, even if they weren't like a heavyweight in the sport?
Yeah, I love watching Manny Pacquiao. You know, it was so exciting. So he was one of the guys I looked up to coming up. And then Mayweather for his work ethic. You know, I think what he did was so amazing. Like the way he was able to keep focused, even with all the money he had, and his focus on being the best.
Do you think Pacquiao is the best welterweight at the moment?
I think I was supposed to tell you the truth.
Okay. So, does that mean you think Pacquiao might be number two?
Yeah, for sure. Especially after his performance against Pete Thurman. I mean, he put on a great performance.
All right. Well, as we mentioned, you know, we know you're on the East Coast, Adam, and we appreciate you calling in because we are on the West Coast, so we appreciate you accommodating our time schedule over here for our episode. And as I said, yeah, you know, we extend our congratulations here from the team at the Last Round for your win this past Saturday on Fox against Chris Arreola, and of course, at the birth of your son at the end of the month. So, you know, big congratulations on that. And then, you know, anything you want to promote, anything you want to say to your fans, promote your social media, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I mean, it's 10:30 here, so I'm a little bit sleepy. But thanks for having me on. Follow me on the AK Babyface on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And watch out for me. You know, definitely I'll make a lot of noise in 2020.
All right, I heard that. I can't, you know, we can't wait to see it because you're in the midst of a great era in heavyweight boxing right now. So I know a lot of fans are looking forward to the potential matchups in the division. But once again, we thank you for jumping on the Last Round, Adam, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Take care. Undefeated, man. These guys, you know, these heavyweight guys, like, I'm so glad that guys like him and Ruiz and all these other guys are making their mark, because we were already having a great time with Wilder, Fury, Joshua, and stuff like that, and even Ortiz right there, especially after, like, the Klitschko era and stuff, which, I mean, I was a fan of the Klitschkos. I know people were bored, but I was a fan of them. Like, you know, I was still a fan, but I'm kind of glad, like I said, that Ruiz and Babyface are in it, too, and they're kind of trying to make their mark, and you know, they're trying to disrupt the system here.
Yeah, they're good boxers as well. You know, you watch them, they're very fluid. You know, his style's, you know, better, more exciting to watch than, you know, your Anthony Joshua, who's more of a athlete boxing, you know, because, you know, Ruiz and Kaunaki have both been boxers since like a young age, which you can kind of tell in their style. You know, they mix punches up well. They don't just throw like 1-2, 1-2 and stay on the outside. They come in and they throw a lot of combinations. And, you know, when you see a heavyweight, you know, like the fight we were just talking about, throwing 2,172 combined punches.
That's insane.
That's insane numbers for a heavyweight fight. So, you know, that's the fight from the weekend is probably one of the better heavyweight fights we've seen this year. Not in terms of, you know, we didn't get a knockout, but we didn't get the shock.
But there was constant action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is unusual, you know, in you know, years gone by, you see the heavyweights, they'd throw 30, 40 punches and they'd get tired and they'd just hug each other. Especially if you looked at, you know, aesthetically, Kaunaki and Arreola, you'd have been like, oh, these guys are going to blow out after four rounds.
Yeah, but, you're right. You know, I'm sure people thought that. And I mean, look at what happened.
The year of the dad bod that people keep talking about, you know.
The dad bods are killing it.
So
killing it, man. I mean, I thought it was insane that I think what Arreola, according to CompuBox, threw over like 1,100 punches, which was the most by a heavyweight in the 34 year history of CompuBox. And then, you know.
Do you think he retires?
You know what? I was going to ask Adam Babyface about that, but you know, it kind of slipped my mind now that you mentioned it. I don't know, because he still looked good.
Like, he looked better.
Yeah, like I mean, like the previous performances he had before this, like, weren't on par with this one. Like, no. He looked really good, and like, I know, you know, he lost and stuff, but like, you know, it's not that easy to still look decent in a losing effort.
If he does retire, it's more of, you know, like a Klitschko retirement, where, you know, he lost Anthony Joshua, but people enjoyed it because, you know, he went out on his shield, you know, he knocked Joshua down, got up, and then was defeated himself. You know, Ariola, surprisingly, lost the fight, and everyone's talking about how well he did against, you know, lately one of his better opponents, you know, taken out of the fact, you know, when he fought Wilder. But over the previous years, he's fought people, you know, names that we didn't really know. He would get the win, but he would, you know, come through a little bit of a war in fights that he should be winning quite easily.
Right.
Where in this fight against, you know, an up-and-coming, really good prospect in Kaunaki.
Yeah. I don't think he's a prospect anymore. I think he's...
Yeah, his age, he shouldn't be.
Well, but, yeah, his age, yeah. But yeah. I think he's a contender.
He's definitely top six.
Yeah, I don't think that's a prospect anymore. I don't think he's a prospect anymore. I think a couple fights, like, he's definitely in the mix.
Yeah, he's up there. You know, he's just like 6'7", around the kind of, I would say, the Dillon White sort of numbers.
Yeah.
Taking out the big four of Fury, Wilder, Joshua.
Yeah.
Andy Ruiz, obviously.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, if Ariola goes out like this, then, you know, I think he had a great career. He fought for the world title, I think, three times, I think. I remember when he fought for the world title the first time in 2009 against Klitschko out here at the Staples Center in L.A. It was a huge fight. You know, Ariola drew a good amount of people because, you know, the Mexican fan base. And of course, Klitschko coming over here, because Klitschko never fought. Like, I don't know. I'm sure he had it by that point, but like, the Klitschko brothers in general always fought across the pond,
mm-hmm.
over there by you guys. So when he came over here to fight at Staples Center against, you know, a Mexican American who was fighting for the world title, and you know, I remember that there was a lot of hype behind that, because like, oh, Ariola could have been the first heavyweight champion of the world who was Mexican, and he, you know. It didn't pan out, but I'm always going to remember that post-fight interview when he lost. Like, he was really emotional, like, crying, and he was just yelling the F word. He's like, man, I can't believe I lost. This sucks. Like, man, like, you could tell he was, like, really affected. He was, like, he wanted to win so badly, and which is great. It just shows you the emotion of a fighter. But like you said, if he goes out on this one and he retires, then, you know, like you said, it's kind of like a Klitschko Joshua performance going out on your shield. You know, what better to go out than in a record, even though it was a losing effort, it was a record-setting fight.
Yeah, because of that performance, you know, with a new coach in Yoguzin, that it's kind of interesting to see, you know, he lost to Kaunaki, who we, you know, both agree is probably top six or top seven. So, you know, with the heavyweight scene being so popular and big at the moment, you could see him maybe sticking around for a couple more paydays, maybe fighting, you know, guys around the between the 10 to 15 kind of rating. But if he retires, you know, he's had a decent career. What, 45 fights, is it? So
I thought, because I think Wilder was on that broadcast on Fox this past Saturday. I think he mentioned that, and I thought it was actually a very good description, that Ariola is like a gatekeeper, yeah, of the heavyweight division. And I was like, you know, I agree with that. Like, you know, he's one of those guys, like, you need to get through, or you should get through before you get to that next echelon. So I was like, that's a pretty good description, because it is. And Wilder, yeah, fought Ariola. I mean, I think he stopped him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, Ariola's been in some pretty good fights with some pretty decent names in there, you know. But Wilder, Klitschko, you know, I think he's had a pretty decent career.
Yeah, I think he's had a great career for the set of skills that he has.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, he's not the most technically gifted boxer, should we say.
No, but he made do with what he had. I mean, he's right here from Riverside, California, which isn't that far from our studio. Like, it's, you know, it's right here in the Southern California area. So, you know, he did his thing, and then, you know, I'm sure when Ruiz won, he was happy for him, but he was like, man, that could have been me.
That could have been, should have been.
Yeah, you know, it could have, would have, should have. You know, you can't look back on the past like that. But, you know, if this is the last curtain call for the nightmare, you know, here at the last round, we thank him and his team for all the memories he put in the ring, blood, sweat, and tears. Because it's not easy stepping between those ropes all the time. So, especially as a heavyweight. It's a different level when you get to heavyweight boxing.
Different danger.
Different danger.
When you're getting hit by 200, 270-pound guys.
Yeah. That should be their tagline. Like, the heavyweight division. A different danger. If they market that, they better give us some royalties or something. I swear. And then since we're on this card, like I said, it was from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Jean Pascal, by technical decision, defeats Marcus Brown for the WBC silver and interim WBA light heavyweight title. Brown was down in round 4 and twice in round 7. An accidental headbutt called the fight in round 8. Did you catch this fight?
Yeah, it's a strange fight. Very Jean Pascal kind of like rolled back the years, and Marcus Brown just couldn't. Every time they kind of like tied up and then separated, Pascal would just catch him, you know, as they were kind of just coming out of like the clinch. Yeah.
And he wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, but Brown just couldn't seem to get his head around that. So those right hands just kept dropping him, and Marcus Brown just didn't seem to have the legs. For some reason, there seems to be even though it's a WBC and WBA light heavyweight interim title fight, there was a rematch clause, which I believe Marcus Brown.
I saw that. Yeah, I was like, what the hell?
Which kind of seems odd, but you know, the Marcus Brown immediately kind of called that. So we should see them fight again. It was a good fight, you know, for the people just watching it who had no, you know, wasn't one of their favorite fighters on either side. I thought it was a decent fight to watch.
Yeah, provide some solid entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some blood, a couple of knockdowns,
blood, sweat,
and an early stoppage.
So it worked out. It worked out. And then also reversing Friday the 2nd of August. From the Exhibition Center in Liverpool on DAZN, Anthony Fowler improves to 10-1 with the unanimous decision win in 10 rounds over Brian Rose by scores of 98-92 twice and 97-93 for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Middleweight title. What do you think of Fowler's performance?
One of his best performances since he's been a pro. He stepped in after suffering his first loss to Scott Fitzgerald. He actually stepped in for Scott Fitzgerald for this fight. And I thought it was actually one of his better as a pro. He kind of stuck to his boxing. I thought early in his career, he kept wanting to kind of, you know, go in there and get the knockout. So he was going like 5 wins, 5 KOs, 6 wins, 6 KOs. So to this time, I thought his jab looked really, really good. And he kind of made Brian Rose look, you know, the kind of aged boxer that he was.
Yeah.
So that could be the last time we see Brian Rose out there. Definitely more of a workmanlike performance for Fowler. So hopefully something that, you know, I think the first loss may have done him well, kind of brought him back down to earth a little bit. Now, you know, he came in with a big pedigree. I think he was Britain's most successful amateur.
What?
Of all time, so.
That's a pretty big distinction.
Yeah, I believe he either is or he's up there as one of the most decorated amateurs we've had.
What?
So, you know, turning pro, maybe that loss has done him well. He kind of, you know, knocked him back down a little bit and realized, you know, that he's not just going to go in there and blow all these guys out there.
Humility.
Exactly. It's a good way to describe it. So, you know, onwards and upwards from here, even though he suffered that loss, he kind of stepped in for the person that beat him and then won the fight, and now he's moved on. So,
yeah,
you know, he got in there and he actually called out Scott Fitzgerald to try and, you know, get the rematch.
Try to avenge that.
Yeah, try to reverse that, get revenge. So hopefully we see that in the upcoming weeks, or upcoming months before the end of the year would be nice.
Hopefully. Seems like it'd been an intriguing fight, especially in a rematch. Good selling point right there. Like you said, onward and upward. Also, this past weekend in Marquee Falls Park, Belfast, Northern Ireland. Man, that's a long name. On ESPN Plus, Michael Conlan improves to 12-0 in a 9th-round TKO performance over Diego Alberto Ruiz. Another Ruiz for the WBA and WBO Intercontinental Featherweight title. I mean, how much, you know, Conlan's obviously got some drawing power, with the Irish and stuff like that. And especially, you know, going and fighting over there in Ireland, ESPN going over there and Top Rank going over there and stuff. But I mean, I think he's getting to that level where, you know, they might have to put him in there with somebody. How many more fights do you think? Somebody significant step up?
The thing is though, is I watch him. He doesn't have anything about him. He has the drawing power because he's Irish, and they keep, you know, pulling him out.
He's going to get so
sticking him on, you know, the East Coast, drawing out the Irish fans in New York.
Smart business.
No, exactly. You know, putting him out on St. Patrick's Day. But then when you watch him, there's nothing. Like, he's got the story from outside of the ring. You know, he got cheated in the Olympics, you know, stood there and, you know.
Hey, that was all marketing with that middle finger.
Yeah, you know, pulled up the middle finger at the kind of the referees and, like, you know, F this and turn pro.
Suck on this.
Top rank, you know, kind of jumped on him. You know, he speaks well. He's got the Irish fans. He's got that from the amateurs.
He gets Conor McGregor sometimes on his side.
Yeah, exactly. That's being Irish.
That's pretty big.
Outside of the ring, publicity-wise, he does really well. But his performances, to me, in the ring so far, even though he won this by TKO.
So you're saying that Michael Conlon is the Ryan Garcia of Ireland?
Yeah. At the minute, his performances just don't cut it.
What?
You know, he's better than Ryan Garcia, though. But I think, you know, maybe the change of trainer to his name. What's it? David Hazel trainer.
You should know this.
Yeah, I've gone blank. Can't remember his name.
You go blank a lot. It'll come to you.
Yeah, Adam Booth. So he's changed. So he's changed to there. I'm hoping, you know, we'll give him, you know, more of a slick style, something that's going to be more pleasing on the eye. Because at the minute, he just kind of, you know, he'll take rounds off, kind of walk around a little bit, you know, not too much action. And he seems to be start very slowly as well.
Yeah.
Takes him a few rounds, especially being an amateur, which is weird because obviously you've only got, you know, 3 rounds as an amateur. So to me, I think he needs to up his performances. I'm thinking maybe actually drop him back down, stick him on the Tyson Fury fight coming up, stick him on the undercard.
Oh.
Stick him in with somebody where he hasn't got the pressure of being, you know, because he's turned pro and straight away, and it wasn't that late in his career that they've already, he's headlining events.
Yeah, in New
York. He hasn't had time to, you know, got switched from the amateur style to the professional style.
Right. I agree with that.
Where he can sit down on his punches, you know, learn the differences between amateur and pro. So just, you know, hide him away a little bit before, like you said, like you were already on the stages of, do we need to move him on? Or I think the opposite. I think we need to actually move him back a little bit.
Go reverse a little bit.
Exactly. Stick him on the undercard where you've only got, you know, those media members in the stadium.
No, you're right.
So you can just, you know, perfect it, get him in there with some tall guys, some small guys, some southpaws, some, you know, light-handed guys, some heavy-handed guys, just to, you know, make him more well-rounded, then push him on.
No, you're right. You're right. But when, you know, when these young guys are not even young guys, just in general, when they can have some type of drawing power, you know, it's these promoters are just like, oh, you know,
like Ryan Garcia, like we were talking about before the show,
which has its own drama in and of itself. The last couple
that's
of
a whole
days.
Show,
man. That's a whole show we've dedicated to that whole drama that's been happening the last couple of days between that. But yeah, I agree with that. I think you kind of have to reverse him a little bit, slow his. I don't know if saying slowing his progress is the right analogy, but like kind of maybe slowing him down, like you said, putting him in with southpaws and different forms of you know, fighters and stuff like that. Put him on undercards, like I'm putting him on the Tyson Fury undercard. You know, if he's not injured and he's doing okay, you know, put him in there with somebody else. You know, just to kind of, you know, get him in. You know, it doesn't have to be like obviously like a significant opponent. It's just like, you know, of course, like an opponent to look good against. You know, and like you say, he doesn't have the pressure of headlining, so there's that. There's that. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe he'll come out with Conor McGregor in the next fight. He already has before. So he's also come out with the WWE guy. There's a WWE guy who's also from
Finn Balor.
Finn Balor.
Yeah.
He's also come out with him. So, and then they push it on, you know, that's smart marketing. Then they push it on like WWE social media and all that stuff. And they, you know, they show it on their shows. So like puts his name out there to, you know, it's like that's smart business right there. Also on that card, Luke Keeler. Defeats Luis Arias. Arias was down in rounds 1 and 9. Was he in there with Jacobs?
Yeah. His only loss before this was to Jacobs. Yeah.
Yeah, it was only against Jacobs, right? Mm. Was that last year or the year before?
Ooh, good question. I would say 2 years ago.
Was it that long already? Damn, 2 years?
But
that's a long
either
time.
Either way, it was a good performance from Luke Keeler.
Luke?
I was surprised. You know, that he made quite easy work of Arias, to be fair. You know, he kind of came out, went straight at him early on, dropped him in the first. And then I don't know whether Arias just didn't recover from that, just wasn't used to the pace. You know, but having someone like Luis Arias on your resume after, you know, his loss before that was against Daniel Jacobs, you know, onwards and upwards, really, from Luke Keeler from there. Good performance from from him. So I'm sure that should lead to some bigger fights.
Oh yeah, he's gonna get Canelo next. I believe it. Never know. Canelo needs an opponent. So does Triple G. As of right now, at least. Moving on. Fight previews this week, the 10th of August from Grand Prairie, Texas, on DAZN USA. A battle of Golden Boy fighters. Virgil Ortiz Jr., 13-0, all 13 knockouts, too. Goes up against Antonio Orozco, 28-1, whose only loss was to Jose Ramirez, the now unified 140-pound champion. I think this is a great fight.
I'm looking forward to it, yeah.
On paper, it's a great fight. I'm hoping it delivers. Because Orozco's been in there with some pretty good names, especially his last fight against Ramirez. Yeah, he lost the fight, but he still looked decent in the fight. And Virgil Ortiz obviously is probably arguably the best prospect that Golden Boy has.
We've been beating this drum for a while.
When we
spoke about, you know, like people like Ryan Garcia, obviously friend of the show, Alexis Rocha, stuff like that. We've always said that, you know, Alexis Rocha, Virgil Ortiz in our eyes are the biggest prospects that Golden Boy have who for some reason, if I was Golden Boy, I'd be throwing money behind them. I'd have them out at all the big shows.
Right.
I'd have them, you know, I know he does now and again on the Canelo undercards.
Right.
Stuff like that. I would have them out all the time, have them on TV shows. You know, they both speak very well. They're both, you know, wise beyond their years. When you speak to them, they're very mature. They're not sort of like we always kind of slay. Ryan Garcia, you can't really trust the guy in an interview. He's comes out with some wacky stuff. So, you know, to me,
we're going to get heat.
You know, to me, they're more of the full package than Ryan Garcia, who has a big Instagram following. He looks good.
Marketable.
But his skills don't pay the bills, where those other two do. But maybe, in hindsight, maybe it is good that they're working away in the background to the point where, you know, Virgil Ortiz fights Mauricio Herrera, and then he has that breakout, you know, on a big show where everyone's now like, hey, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, where same as Alexis Rocha. Eventually down the line, he'll get someone like a Herrera who's coming down the hill, where he's coming up the hill, and that'll be his breakout point.
Right. No, so. You're right. I'm very excited for this fight. I'm very excited for this fight because I think Orozco's still a young guy.
Never gone past 5 rounds as a pro just because he's got such heavy hands.
You're right.
No, sorry, Virgil Ortiz.
Yeah, Ortiz, yeah. But Orozco's still a young guy. He's obviously been in there with some, you know, decent names. His only loss, like I said, is to Ramirez. He's 28-1. And Virgil Ortiz, all of his 13 wins are by knockout, especially his last one was against Herrera, right?
First person to ever stop him.
First person to ever stop Herrera at that point. I think this is a great fight. I wonder if Ortiz feels the pressure of trying to knock out Orozco. I know Orozco's been down before. He was down against Ramirez, but
he's what you class as like a Mexican warrior. He won't give up.
I think this is going to be an awesome fight.
Yeah.
I really do. I hope, like I said, because on paper, it seems like it's going to deliver. So I'm hoping it does because, you know, sometimes we're so disappointed when on paper, like, oh, this is going to be great. And it's just not. So on this, I have high expectations that this is going to be a great fight. And they're fighting in Texas, which is Ortiz's. This is like Ortiz's backyard. He's from Texas.
Yeah.
Even though he mostly trains over here with Robert Garcia out here at the Robert Garcia Boxing Academy.
And before that, he was Joel Diaz's?
In Indio. Yeah. Coachella Valley. And then Orozco trains in San Diego. So they're not even too far apart. They're over here in Southern California. I'm excited for this. Like I said, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes out. You know, I'm going to lean towards... I'm having a tough time here. You know what?
Are you doing it?
I think I might.
The year of the underdog?
I'm going with Orozco, man.
Honestly?
I'm doing it.
What makes you think that?
I just think he still has something to prove, man. And then like you just said, the year of the underdog. I mean, like, is he really an underdog? I know he is. I mean, because Ortiz is knocking everybody out, but like...
But the thing is with Ortiz is he's still well-rounded.
No,
he's not.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I think Ortiz is still an excellent
fighter. I think he's the sort of fighter where even, you know, when he steps up to that level where you can't just knock guys out.
Right.
You know, he can't just rely on that. He is very well-rounded.
Like Teofimo Lopez's last fight.
Exactly. You know, sometimes you'll get in with a guy who you can't knock out, and then to your feet. Well, even though he did look a little bit kind of lost at times, Virgil Ortiz, to me, he picks his punches very well. You know, I've been to the gym and I've seen him spar at Robert Garcia's. I saw him sparring with Lucas Matisse at Joe Diaz's gym, and he mixes them up very well. He'll go to the body, go to the head, you know, left right, stuff like that. He mixes his punches. He just really is a very well-rounded boxer. I think Ortiz, I think he may catch him and take him out. Roscoe, though, he can take a punch and he doesn't give up. That's so maybe a late rounder.
So you're going Ortiz.
I'm
going
to go Ortiz. And I will say stoppage. I think, he really is one of my favorite prospects. And I think he'll do it. And then being in his backyard, I think he'll want to put on a show.
No, you're right. You're right.
But I think he's clever enough and mature enough that he's not going to take, you know, too many risks to leave himself open. I just don't think Orozco is... I actually do like Orozco as well. He's a good fighter. Very, very fun to watch. Good,
great style.
But I just don't think he's as well-rounded. I don't think his skill set is as big as Ortiz.
You're going Ortiz. I'm going Orozco. I'm telling you. I'm trying to keep the magic going from when I chose Cancio against Machado.
You're still living off that.
I'm holding on to that. I'm holding on to that because it worked. And then look at Ruiz beats Joshua, you know, and then Williams beats Hurd. Come on, man.
Did you call all of those?
It's the year. Who did we pick? I mean, who did we pick for Hurd Williams?
I think I picked Hurd. I think I did.
I forgot who I picked. I don't remember. I'm trying to keep it going. That Cancio magic, I'm trying to hold on to it. So I'm not saying that Ortiz can't win it. Of course, he's got the talent to win it, and he's got the hype behind him, and he's,
you know, Golden Boy wanting to win it.
Well, of course. Yeah, of course. But, like, I like Orozco. I think he can still do it. So, it's me against
points.
It's me against you today. Oh, you know what? I don't know. See, I don't know. I don't even know if I want to dive in that deep and actually being specific in how he wins.
Dipping your toe in?
I'm just dipping my toe in and say he gets a W. I'm keeping it general because I don't want to be too... Because you're right. Like, Ortiz knocks everybody out. And, I don't know. I'm telling you, the whole Mexican warrior... attitude for Orozco is what's making me choose him because I believe in that.
Weirdly, his loss now looks better than before.
Yeah.
Now he can say, hey, okay, my only loss is to the unified
champion. Yeah. Yeah, he's right. I mean, you know, who else better than to say that? Like, yeah, I lost to the best guy in the division. He's unified champion. Yeah. So, you know, but whoever wins this essentially would probably be in a good running to be, you know, in line for maybe a title shot in the next maybe two fights.
If you remember, Virgil Ortiz went up to 147.
Yeah, this is at 147 too. It's not at 140.
Do you think he's going to go up and down between the 140 and 147?
I think it depends on what type of fights.
Exactly. Whatever he can pick up a title and, you know, the names, money.
Yeah, if there's a fight that could be at 140 that they think like, hey, you know, if you can go try to get that belt.
I think the wise decision, in my opinion, would be to do it at the... I'm just thinking about that. 140, I'm 147 a stacked. He's in a hard division.
Oh, yeah, he's in a hard division. But, like, yeah, I mean, if he's killing it, like, he's doing his thing. Like, he's 13-0.
The belts are kind of tied up.
They are.
At the 140.
No, they are. They are. But, you know, that's how these type of fighters, sometimes they just have to keep winning and winning and winning to get themselves up the rankings. Because eventually... I mean, as long as you're not in a Dillon White situation, that's 700 days mandatory, WBC mandatory. Like,
and they jumped on that. Oh, yeah. He's suspended. He's suspended before he even even comes back.
Mike, you made your opinion known before we went on air. I was like, you got to save that for on air. You got to save that. So,
and he's on, weirdly, if he goes for the 147 route, he's on the wrong side of the street.
The wrong side of the street. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I think he's in tough divisions, but. Yeah. I think he can rise to the occasion, so we'll see. I'm excited for this fight. That's going to be my favorite fight of the weekend. And also, in a trilogy, also Golden Boy Fighters, Joshua Franco goes up against Oscar Negrete. This is the third fight between the two. They've split.
And we were there for the second?
We were there for the second at Fantasy Springs, right? So they've split both, right?
Yeah, so on the... if I remember rightly, the first one, Negrete won. But a lot of people thought Franco should have done.
Right.
And then on the second one where we were there, we thought Negrete should have won.
And Franco got it.
Yeah. So, you know, they've kind of got one each, which kind of evens it up. So why not do it again?
I mean, they, you know, they put on entertaining fights, both two fights. So like, I'm not mad at this fight. You know, trilogy. You know,
Negrete is, you know, he fought for the WBC title against Ray Vargas a few years back.
Yeah.
He's very small for that division.
And
Ray Vargas is a giant in that division.
He's a giant.
You know, ended up being a kind of a one-sided beatdown, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Interesting fight though. They got Negrete, more of your come forward fighter, kind of just throws punches. Franco a little bit more stylish, in my opinion. I just think Franco should be able to take it if he just doesn't get drawn into fighting Negrete's fight.
Right.
But it's definitely a good warm up for the main event. It's not too bad a card really over in Grand Prairie, Texas, on the Zone.
Yeah, I'm excited. I like this card. I'm looking forward to that card a lot. So, and then also, we're not going to dive into this because earlier today, as you know, just before we recorded this, or at least earlier today, in the boxing world, a freak accident happened to Carl the Jackal Frampton as he was forced to drop out of this Saturday's featherweight main event against Emmanuel Dominguez after fracturing something in his hand. I think I told you before we went on air, when I first read this, I kind of skimmed it and I was like, what? It's fight week. Like, are you serious? Like, I thought he probably got an injury when he was in training and then he's like, oh, I can't go through. I was like, wow, are you kidding me?
The first thing I thought is I read the headline and I was thinking, why is he still sparring?
Yeah, that's one thing I thought too. I was like, what the hell? There's no way. Like, what the hell's going on here? I thought they like hit it and then like eventually the pain just got too much and he backed out like on the fight week. But you want to dive in into what happened? Because it's very, very unusual. It's very unusual.
The reports that's come out so far is that, let's have a look. I'm just going to read it from the Top Rank email. The injury occurred Monday morning at the fight hotel when someone knocked over a concrete structure, which then stuck Frampton's hand.
That's insane.
It's Olive Sten, which is fracturing the fifth metacarpal in his left hand.
What?
So,
what a,
you know,
time.
Carl Frampton actually sent out, I think it was an Instagram post.
It was a video, right?
The one I saw was just, you know, like a screen, some writing saying, I'm gutted for the people. They paid the hard money to make the trip to support me. I spent the summer away from my family training for the fight. All a waste now because of a freak accident. So
that sucks, man.
It'll be one of those.
You better sue that hotel.
You know, it'll be one of those questions in years to come. You know, like who got injured just sitting at a table in a hotel. So, but to be honest with you, not to be, you know, Top Rank do letters in their events, but that card now that fight's taken from it is absolute trash.
Yeah, you're right.
I was not.
As of right now,
the main event is now Jason Sosa against Haskell Lydell Rhodes.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, I mean, I'm assuming they're going to go through with it. I mean, I think they're lucky that it's on ESPN Plus and not ESPN on the app. So, I mean, yeah, they're literally a freak accident. So I don't know what the hell. That's probably one of the most randomest things you're ever going to hear in the sport. So,
do you know the thing that annoys me most? Well, not annoys me, but it's kind of upsets me more, to be honest with you.
What?
That was kind of his comeback fight, kind of expose him. That was his first fight on his new Top Rank deal, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So that would have been his exposure for then hopefully fighting Oscar Valdez.
Yeah, to get a champion.
Leo Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
So,
and I guarantee you Valdez probably would have been in the audience or at least watching that fight very closely.
Well, the rumor is he's stepping up, right?
He's stepping up. Well, I think the reports were that if he couldn't get a name like Carl Frampton or another world title holder, he was going to move up because he didn't want to fight Shakur. And
I believe they were talking about stripping him now.
Probably.
Supposedly.
Probably, but I think he deserves it, man.
And then we're going to see.
He's had that belt for a long time, and I mean, he hasn't really fought anybody of known. But I like Valdez. I think he can fight. He's, like he said, Mexican warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he can be in there with some of the other best world title holders at that division at 126. But, you know, you can't be mad at him for wanting a name. He's like, you know, I want a name. I want somebody else to, you know.
Paid as well.
Yeah, to make some money and to have a good fight, or else I'm going to move up. You know, he's not going to do that with Shakur Stevenson.
No, but the fight that they're talking about.
He's not ducking Shakur. He's not.
Shakur against Joette Gonzalez. That'll be
ooh
heated.
Oof. They got that rivalry going on too after Joette's last fight calling him out and all that stuff. So we'll see. We'll see. And then we'll touch on really quickly the whole The Zone, Golden Boy, Canelo, Ryan Garcia drama that's been happening the last week, last couple days or so. In a nutshell, you know, Canelo obviously doesn't have an opponent yet for his next fight. He usually fights in September, but Golden Boy announced that he wasn't going to fight. Then they were talking about that he was going to fight Derevchenko, who was like the IBF mandatory or something like that. Because a Kovalev fight couldn't be made, and then Kovalev decided to go fight Anthony Yardy, and went away. And reportedly, Canelo really wanted to fight Kovalev, and he was disappointed that Golden Boy couldn't make that fight. So then they focused on Derevchenko, and then there was reports that the Zone didn't approve of him at first, but then they did, and they're like, okay, well, you can fight him. And then these are all just reports, you know. I get, you know, there's reputable sources and stuff like that, but people got to remember, like, just because it's a report out there, like, even if it's from a reputable source, which is good, you know, it's likely true. Like, unless you hear it from the horse's mouth, like, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes about every detail. So people believing all this stuff as gospel, we just don't know.
No.
We just don't know. Well, you know, Derevchenko and Canelo, I guess, were reportedly negotiating, but then they couldn't agree to money terms, because I think we had talked about, like, all these fighters, especially under DAZN and stuff like that, who are trying to get the same money that Danny Jacobs got, where he got between like 12 and 15 million to fight Canelo. But I mean, you got to think about it. Jacobs is a bigger name. He's like the third biggest name in the middleweight division behind Triple G and Canelo. So, like,
yeah.
I mean, like, Derevchenko can't get that type of money.
No. I think people, I can understand they want, you know, to get the best deal they can for themselves, because they know it's going to be the biggest payday.
I understand that.
But if you're going from two, I don't know what, say, for example, Kovalev, I believe, was offered the maximum of 8 million, and he was holding out for closer to 10. But if the most you're normally getting paid is, say, 1 million, and then now you're getting 8, just take it. And I can understand you wanting to get 10, but to go from that to, okay, now you're fighting Anthony Yard for,
in Russia,
for, I don't know, $500,000 to $1 million. Especially when you're 30, when you're Kovalev's age, just take it. That's a retirement pot there. Because supposedly he was offered Canelo.
Reportedly.
And then, you know, like a one or two comeback fights also on DAZN.
Yeah.
You know? I believe it was a comeback fight, and then Bivol was the rumor. So, you know, 8 million and then...
When I heard that, I was like, damn, he better take that. That sounds like a great way to go out.
Well, supposedly the rumor was that Oscar De La Hoya kept waiting and waiting and waiting, hoping Kovalev would kind of crumble and take it, that they ended up doing the Anthony Yard fight, then they would have to pay Kovalev, I believe, 8 million, 2 million to Anthony Yard to step aside money, because obviously he was the mandatory, and then, you know, some money to main events. So the whole pot was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because they took too long to finalize it. So that was the rumor that everyone was talking about. So
I mean, I don't know. This is just a whole, just crazy world that's been happening over there at DAZN, Golden Boy, and stuff like that. And then, like, you know, these tweets from like De La Hoya, and then Golden Boy matchmaker Robert Diaz, and then Golden Boy president Eric Gomez saying, like, you know, that they all back each other, and, you know, De La Hoya saying he stands behind his soldiers and all this stuff, and then Canelo tweeting out something that, or putting out something on social media saying that he was like kept in the dark by Robert Diaz. He didn't say Robert Diaz's name. He just said the Golden Boy matchmaker about something. And then there was reports that in Triple G's contract with DAZN, that DAZN guaranteed him a third fight with Triple G or with Canelo. And it's like, what? You can't get, isn't there like a, I feel like we talked about this before. I feel like we had learned about this before, that you can't guarantee a fight with somebody. Like, there's some type of rule. I think it's like the Ali Act.
The Muhammad Ali Act.
Maybe. I think it's in there where, like, you can't guarantee, like, a fight with somebody.
Really?
I might be wrong, but I feel like...
That would kind of make sense, because if it was guaranteed, I would have thought John Skipper, the head of DAZN, would have turned around to Canelo and Triple G and both said, you're fighting September the 14th.
Yeah.
It's in your goddamn contract.
Yeah.
You're going to do as you're told.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of surprised when we kept getting later and later and later, and people were like, yeah, it's not going to go ahead. And I was thinking, well, isn't it in their contract? Like, why would they give Canelo such a large contract and Triple G such a large contract and not tell them,
right,
you two are fighting?
Right. No, you're right. And I honestly, I still think that, like, if it was going to happen eventually next year. But there's reports now that this whole situation is coming to light, is that Golden Boy had like told the Zone before they like signed the deal, and Canelo signed their deal, like, you know, they pretty much promised them like, yeah, we'll get the third Triple G fight and stuff like that. And then supposedly Canelo was pissed off about that. He didn't know about that and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know. Like, and then like Canelo talks about like him getting the IBF stripped him because they couldn't make a fight deal with Derevchenko. But Lou DiBella, who's Derevchenko's promoter, and Derevchenko and his team, I think they knew what they were doing from the get-go. I think they waited out, and they waited out unless they got that figure that they wanted, which they probably knew they weren't. Like, okay, well, it doesn't matter. He's like, I still got offered to supposedly get the same amount of money to fight Triple G for the vacant title that they just stripped Canelo of. And Triple G's older, you know? Canelo's obviously in his prime. He's a lot more dangerous. I mean, Triple G's still dangerous, don't get me wrong, but I think they're looking at it as like a pros and cons thing here. I mean, in terms of Derevchenko and Lou DiBella looking at it, how they did, I mean, we'll never know, because I don't know, who knows if they'll ever admit it. Maybe they'll admit it in interviews like DiBella or something, but that seems like it was very, very strategic to me. I think they knew what they were doing from the get-go, and they just kind of waited it out unless they really got that figure they wanted.
It's funny how 2 years ago Triple G dropped the IBF, so he didn't have to fight Derevchenko, and now 2 years on, he's fighting him.
Yeah, how ironic. It just comes full circle. Just comes full circle, and then, you know, here we are. So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you know,
it's going to be a quiet September the 14th, though.
Yeah.
Either way, we haven't got the usual.
Jesse Vargas versus Jaime Munguia.
Oh, that would make it up for it.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. But, I mean, like we talked about it on air just before. I don't know. A part of me, and this is maybe just like, I just feel that Golden Boy, this might be a whole like ploy. Because I just can't see that Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya, Eric Gomez, and Robert Diaz put out like statements on social media saying this and that, and then Canelo says something. Like, Canelo, everybody knows that Canelo is the lifeline of Golden Boy. Everybody knows that. And nobody's saying that to bash Golden Boy or nothing. Like, Golden Boy at one point had essentially all the PBC fighters. You know, they had Porter, Garcia, Wilder, all that stuff, and then Schaefer left, and then that whole drama with, you know, Heyman doing something in the contract, and there was some partnership, and then Heyman, you know, exercised some clause that took all the fighters with him and bought them out and all this crap, and now they're all with PBC. At one point, Golden Boy had all these fighters. So, and, you know, I just think, like, I don't know, I just think it's kind of ironic that, like, they would put this out, or maybe they just got irritated that Canelo put out a statement, so they're like, what? No, like, because Canelo's the lifeline of that company, you know? Like, if you're going to make him irritated to a point where, I mean, I know he probably still has a contract. I think he recently re-signed not too long ago. But if you're going to irritate your biggest star, not just in your company, but in the sport of boxing, to the point where he might not re-sign, or he might get a lawyer, like his...
Buy himself out? Like,
yeah, buy himself out. You know, like, is that a smart business move? I mean, like, they don't... There's nobody else in the Golden Boy stable who's drawing right now. Like, Canelo, I think, probably makes 70-80% of their revenue.
Oh, easily.
Easily? Yeah. I mean, and that's just like a ballpark figure, so.
I found it weird that Canelo even really, like, tweeted about it, you know, because
it's very rare that you see him. It's not like him. That's the thing. Like,
and does he even run his social media?
I'm going full conspiracy theories here. I think this is all planned by Golden Boy. They're doing it on purpose to create some drama.
See, I can see it.
They're all in on it together.
I can see it from De La Hoya. He kind of, you know, lives with his heart on his sleeve. You know, he's quite, it's not, you know, it's not unusual for him to come out and say some, you know, quite emotional and crazy things on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, and get into arguments with people. But Canelo, I thought was odd because he's such a big star.
I wasn't like him.
No, it wasn't like him, and I don't even know whether he even runs, you know, someone like him. Does he even run his social media? So, you know, is the person who put it, you know, was that something that Canelo told him to put? And then why not just keep it behind closed doors?
Well, that's what I thought. That's why I think, like, I mean, this could be real. I'm not saying it's not, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they're all, like, in on it together. Like, let's create some drama to get some...
It's the last thing they need, because they've already got the drama with Ryan Garcia, which is, you know...
All right. That's, he was... You know what? I wanted to touch on that before we ended the show, but we're not. It's We're not going to touch on that. So the Canelo news is the most important news.
I mean, it's not a happy camp, put it that way. Golden
it's
boy.
It's not. But also I'm going to say about all this stuff. When you sign a contract, whether it's a prospect contract or not, you know, that's all I got to say. You know, you sign the contract. Don't complain about something now, you know.
But when you're the biggest guy in the sport, like Ryan Garcia thinks he is.
You just love mentioning that name.
You know, you can do what you want.
Man. But, you know, once again, wrapping up here, episode 44 of The Last Round, we want to thank our guest, heavyweight Adam Babyface Kownacki. So I want to make sure I say it right. Because a lot of people say Kownacki, but it's Kownacki. We want to thank him for jumping on this week as this week's guest on The Last Round, especially after his big win, his record-setting win in Brooklyn on Fox against against Chris the Nightmare Areola. So we want to thank him for coming on, and once again we want to send our congratulations from the team here at The Last Round to him and his wife and his family for the future birth of their child, which is at the end of the month. So he sounded very excited, so we wish him the best of luck on that. And Mike, where can they follow us on social media?
You can catch us at The Last Round 12 on Twitter and Instagram, and then join us next week. You know, we'll have the review of the fight we were talking about, Virgil Ortiz,
yep,
Antonio Orozco, and then we'll be previewing Navarrete against Francisco de Vaca, Chris Van Herden against Coez. You know, that's the first outdoor event at the new Bank of California Stadium in Los Angeles.
It's going to be fun.
So it should be a good event coming up.
It's going to be fun. So once again, from my co-host, Michael, the Franchise Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.